Investors Chronicle.
Companies and Markets Show, 21st of December 2022. It's our last show of the year, ladies and gentlemen. We've had a great year podcasting with you guys, and we'll be back in 2023, touch wood. But for now, Chris Akers joining us. Hiya, Chris.
Hi, John. Good to see you.
Hello. Good to have you here. Alex Newman as well. Hello, Alex.
Hi, John. How are you?
Very well. And Dan Jones, welcome to our last show. What is coming up today?
Hi, John. Today we are discussing Currys in our Result of the Week slot. They had their figures out a few days ago now. Some interesting things to discuss there. There is no issue of the IC this week because we had our big bumper issue last week, but we do have a preview of a couple of bits coming out from the issue of the 30th, which Alex will be discussing with me. That is specifically the Ideas of the Week review and the Stock Screens review, so we will be digging into those. And then we're going to conclude on a jolly note, which is why everyone is ill at the moment and what that can mean for certain listed companies.
Yeah, that hits quite close to home, in terms of our team, at least. Before we get there, we'd normally do a news segment, but this week, a special feature, just because it's the final episode of 2022. And indeed, our colleague Arthur Sands, who writes on tech, has recently been writing about the rise of AI chatbots and asking whether AI is going to be replacing humans' jobs in the near future. And we wondered whether 2023 would come around and would be replaced by AI. So I ran an AI script simulator and I told it to write us a script of the Companies and Markets show. And before we get to our human show, here's what the AI came up with.
Welcome to the Companies and Markets podcast. Today we'll be discussing the turbulence of 2022 and looking ahead to 2023. Joining me are Alex Newman and John Rogers.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Tanguy Tompkins was a new broker working in the firm's office in Hong Kong, and he had just had his FLO, which was fantastic. In his downtime, though, he wasn't having so much fun. Thoughts on that, Alex?
I mean, well, you know that in any business, there's some turmoil along the way, but looking back on it, it seems to have started after a certain date. But what happened after that? Was it because of human error?
Or was it because of something?
Perhaps we should ask ourselves if the market's fault really exists at all.
Or is it just a reflection of our own screwed up economic situation? But instead of talking about trading fees, for example, maybe we should ask what, if anything, makes us human?
You're probably right. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for. Any last thoughts, John?
Well, I'll end on a question for today. What happens when all is said and done?
We'll see you tomorrow morning.
We can do another podcast tomorrow morning then, is that what you're
according to AI.
According to AI.
Well, my interpretation of AI there, that script, is I'm going to take the positive interpretation, which is that our jobs are safe for now, and not B, that is an accurate reflection of what we normally sound like on the podcast. Yeah.
I thought some of the thoughts and the cadences were pretty accurate, actually. But yeah, I think your jobs are safe.
We got the intro down and then it quickly went downhill with the made up broker and things like that in Hong Kong. Anyway, let's get on to the meat of today's show, the real content. We are going to start, as mentioned, with Currys. It's figures out a few days ago. Obviously, retail is not a particularly nice place to be at the moment. Chris, you wrote up these results. You analysed them last Thursday, I believe it was. And there's a couple of things that jump out immediately. First of all, the big impairment charge, which came as a bit of a surprise to people. Currys obviously said it took that $500 million charge due to high gilt yields, you know, increasing the discount rate, which affected the goodwill it had recorded on previous deals, the Dixons and Carphone warehouse deal in particular. So that came as a bit of a surprise, and there were some other things in the figures as well that weren't particularly great.
Yeah, that's right, Dan. So the goodwill impairment was the obvious headline, a big chunky £511 million charge, as you mentioned. And I guess this is just further evidence that higher rates are hitting valuations, and this can cause pretty serious problems for companies. And yeah, this charge dragged Currys down to a statutory pre-tax loss. So quite a big deal for them. Getting on to the meat of the results. So while the impairment charge drove the loss, it was also quite a weak sales performance. Revenues were down 6% against pre-pandemic levels, down 10% in the UK and Ireland, down by 4% in the Nordics. And it was actually only in Currys' smallest market, which is Greece, where sales went up. I think the story here is, as we've discussed at the IC and in many different areas, consumers cutting back on discretionary spending, in this case, discretionary electronics spending due to cost of living pressures, real wages falling, inflation going up is not a pretty combination for retail spending. And there was a particularly weak performance in international cash profits. So adjusted cash profits for Currys in international markets were down by 94%, which is quite a significant drop.
Yeah, but the international side does contain some other bellwethers, perhaps insofar as I think Currys said some of that drop was driven by competitors discounting because they had too much stock, effectively, which is, again, something we've discussed as a risk this year. You know, the company's building up inventory to guard against supply chain issues right at the moment when demand drops off. And this obviously can hit those companies who have to take the hit to their top line in terms of what they sell these products for. But as we've seen with Currys, it can hit competitors as well if consumers then naturally gravitate to those cheaper goods.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, as you said, Currys pointed to competitors' heavy discounting of excess stock as the driver behind their weak international performance. And just to give some figures on that, so that Currys said that drove a 54% contraction in operating cash flow and a decrease in free cash outflow of 86 million. So it's had a huge impact on their results. And as you mentioned, it's sort of, classic case of battling for market share. Inventories going up, and Currys' inventory actually went up 11% as we head up to the Christmas period. So they're getting in.
Clearly, with retailers, a lot depends on the holiday period, which we are right in the middle of now, the retail sales figures. Over that time, I know you wrote about retail sales in general and the prospects for the next few weeks. At the start of the month, what's your sort of take on the outlook so far? I know Black Friday, for example, wasn't particularly great this year. How are things shaping up for the Christmas period?
Yeah, as I said in that piece on retail spending, I think the outlook is still very challenging. Obviously, Christmas is traditionally a bumper period for retail companies. So Currys is expecting, or would hope for, a bump in sales as people sort of buy electronics as gifts, obviously. But looking at the latest sales data from the ONS, Office for National Statistics, it does show that volumes are struggling down pretty heavily as shoppers keep cutting back. And as you mentioned, Black Friday didn't really provide a boost, as one might have expected, to sales volumes. And this is sort of evident in Currys results. Management have said the next 6 months aren't going to be easy. They've cut their forecasts. So management now expects adjusted pre-tax profits for the full year of 100 to 125 million. And that's a cut from 125 to 145 million they expected before. They're also planning to invest less. So CapEx spending is now expected to come in at 120 million. So the outlook as we head towards Christmas.
We had just this morning, I think, some CBI trade survey data, which for retail sales, which was better than expected. But I have seen some suggestions that on a seasonal basis, which is perhaps a more accurate tracking of official figures, that wasn't quite as good as it looked. The other risk with retailers, or, there are many risks facing them right now, not least the lack of demand or potential lack of demand, as we have been discussing, is perhaps some of the things that we've seen happen in the past, 2008, and also in the summer with AO World, which is these kind of hidden risks almost where, even if a company's balance sheet looks all right, it's a question of what suppliers are doing. AO World got into trouble earlier this year, didn't it, in terms of its suppliers not being able to get insurance to deal with it. And that obviously then leads to a bit of a cash squeeze all along the chain. So I think that's something people should look out for as well. Is that a fair assessment? Not to say that Currys is necessarily going to face a cash call in the near future, but these kind of risks do come to prominence when times are tough, when recessionary environments emerge.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, AO World is a good example. So that's a sort of pandemic winner, but the share price has since cratered. And as you said, that badly hit in the summer when a credit insurer cut cover for the company's suppliers with fears around falling sales post-pandemic and also supply chain issues, which is a retail-wide issue. But yeah, it's been a very difficult year for retail overall, obviously, with surging inflation, consumers reacting to real-term wage cuts, trends of trading down to cheaper products and cutting back on spending. So there are plenty of negative stories in the retail space. Obvious examples come to mind, like the collapses of Maids.com and Jewels over the last few months. But I think going back to Currys to finish off, it is worth mentioning that we do have Currys on a hold still. So we think its valuation is still quite attractive, still a market leader in several of its markets and electronics. And I think long-term, its operating margin prospects still look pretty good.
Just a question, of weathering the storm for now. Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Let's turn to our next section with Alex Newman, our ideas editor, looking at the ideas, how they've performed, our weekly ideas this year, and our stock screens as well. These two features will be in our 30th of December issue, as mentioned. Let's start with the ideas, Alex. How have they gone this year? Obviously, it's been a very tricky year for markets, tough year to generate alpha, if you will. How have we done?
Yeah. So we've beaten the market this year by 1.4%. Which is pretty good, I think, given the year we've had. But I think there's quite a few caveats to that sort of headline figure. The first being that the buys, which is the majority of the ideas we write, because we're primarily trying to find ideas that people can invest in rather than short-term trading opportunities, were down, both in absolute performance terms and also relative to each stock's index. So the average underperformance there was 0.5%, which is not terrible, but it's about, it's kind of, you sort of reversion to the mean is a bit inevitable there when you're coming up with 86 ideas in the course of the year. But what really worked for our ideas section this year in very qualified terms is our bearishness. So the writers came up with a lot more sell ideas this year, and I think that's partly a reflection of both the bearish sentiment, but I think there were quite obvious as far as any investing trends are obvious, opportunities to either take profits or short the stock. I mean, there's complications with shorting, which we can sort of touch on a little bit, but our sell ideas did really, really well. So their average return was 14% nearly. So when you compare that against the index, for those picks, the average outperformance was 15%. So hence we've got the positive outperformance for the 98 ideas we did altogether. But yeah, obviously there's a pretty big caveat in there, in that most of ideas are down for the year. So those are the sort of headlines.
I suppose, as you say, a lot of those ideas, they are long-term in nature, which sounds like a bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card. But you'd hope for a decent timeline for some of those to come good as well. What were some of the maybe individual examples of, I think on the sell side, Amazon as a particularly fruitful sell call earlier in the year, for example?
Yeah, so at the beginning of February, we wrote a sell idea on Amazon. I think by that point, its really high valuation was looking quite precarious against rising inflation, pressures on consumers, interest rates going up, and the discount rate that you'd apply to a stock, which, at points in the last couple of years has traded on close to 100 times forward earnings, was looking unsustainable. So when I say there were obvious ideas, I don't think Amazon necessarily was, any stock idea is obvious, but for us that felt like quite a clear sell case at the beginning of the year. As it proved, most, highly valued US tech stocks at the beginning of the year were quite overvalued, and their share prices have come down significantly. But yeah, that was one example. And you know, if there are kind of themes to some of our ideas this year, that is one maybe worth picking out, because we've also had sell ideas on Just Eat Takeaway and Ocado Group. Both are sort of, well, all three are kind of part of the convenience sort of immediacy economy. So they've created business models which have really hammered the retailers that we were talking about in the previous section. But this year, I mean, being great at logistics has not really been a winner, because there've been such cost inflation pressures on even those sort of disruptor retail businesses that they have really struggled, and their earnings have really taken a hit. And in the case of Amazon, their international and North American e-commerce businesses are no longer profitable, and the last four quarters at an operating profit level have been loss making. So with Amazon, there's an increasing reliance on the wildly profitable cloud computing division, AWS, and that's been the story of their success of the last 10 years. But something here about their investment case still doesn't quite add up, and they're going to have to turn the corner pretty soon, because you can't have the bulk of your business losing money and this increasing reliance on profitable but thinning margins from the cloud computing division. So yeah, that was probably one of the standout ideas if I was going to pick one this year.
As well as ideas, of course, you look after stock screens for us, and the coming issue will also feature a review of those. Obviously, they are used as a starting point to filter out some good, some suggestions for investors. Again, it's been a difficult year this year with a lot of trends reversing and changing course. What's the general take on the stock screen performance this year?
Yeah, it's a little hard to square against our ideas of the week, because they've kind of trended in line with the market, or in the case of the sells, we've opportunistically managed to beat the market. I mean, the stock screens got really trounced this year. There was only one very, very speculative, highly levered screen which seemed to work. And even then, I'd probably put that down to a combination of luck and sample size that, I would be surprised if it repeated its run this year. But I mean, across most investment strategies, it's been very tough to beat the UK benchmarks, being the FTSE All Share, which, because of the bias of the UK market, particularly at the top of the market, to resource companies and sort of value stocks that have done quite well in this tightening environment, it's a very hard benchmark to beat, basically. So value strategies have worked, but only if they've selected from those resource stocks or banks, for example. Growth as a strategy, which takes up quite a few of our screens, has just been blown away, because lots of those businesses were rated on quite keenly. Momentum has occasionally worked as a strategy in some of our screens, but not that consistently, and that's, I think, maybe a feature of how the sort of whipsawing markets we've seen. So something that's in vogue very briefly, and then all of a sudden it sheds 20% on a poor trading update. Our stock screens, this is my first year of running them as well. Up until, my taking them over, they had a sort of phenomenal decade. I will say that, I've tried to stick to the experimental scientific rigor with which they were sort of intended, that Algae sort of designed them to be. But yeah, just the picks from last year and the picks from this year just really haven't delivered. So I'm interested to see how things are going to pan out over the next couple of years. My sense is that we will get a bit more dispersion in the returns and the screen success compared to the last decade, when actually most of them had done very well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It will be interesting to see what happens there. And yeah, as a first year, a bit of a baptism of fire with the screens, but I don't think we can doubt your commitment and your endeavours, which is all of which is a way for me to crowbar in the fact you are today wearing some Investors Chronicle socks.
Oh, yeah.
As a, again, a demonstration of your commitment to the brand.
That's true, yeah. I mean, I think everyone was trying to wear something Christmassy today. And yesterday, our marketing department, I think they're obviously having an absolutely mad clear out of all the crap in their cupboards, produced some Investors Chronicle. They're actually quite Christmassy red socks, which I saw from the label are 80% cotton, 17%. What's the 17% polyamide and 3% elastane. So a diversified sock portfolio.
This is how
for anyone who was asking for an asset allocation, socks based asset allocation.
Yeah. This is how well prepared you are. You've brought the tag.
It just happened to fall into my the other bit of Investors Chronicle merch, which I got yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, this harks back to what we said earlier about excess inventory, I think, as well. I mean, I don't know. I think all this stuff is quite a few years old when we apparently had money to burn on spending on making branded socks, which, you know, is an unusual marketing tool, but there we are. Anyway.
Why don't we do an offer? I'm sure John would approve of a new on the off-the-cuff feature, but I think there are some more socks left, so the first caller in can have them. The first emailer in.
You do well to call into this podcast, given it won't go out for a day or two. Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. There are some socks on offer as an end-of-year treat. What more could you ask for? Speaking of the end of the year, though, we're going to end on a slightly more downbeat note and discuss the fact that everyone appears to be ill at the moment. Obviously, this is to some extent something we've gotten used to over the last few years, pandemic, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, this year you've got a bit of COVID around. You seem to have a varying degree of respiratory illnesses. Colds are back, flu. All of my nephews and nieces seem to currently have either scarlet fever or strep A or anything like that. They all seem to be okay, touch wood. But the long and the short of it is there is a lot of things around at the moment. And there is an investment point to this as well. I mean, this both in terms of a company read across, but also even economically, I've seen some economists refer to this as a triple-demic this winter. Jen, our pharma biotech correspondent, is here to discuss this issue, having also been slightly under the weather yourself in the past few weeks.
Yes, it seems to have run through the entire IC team, actually. Mm. So you might have had some croaky podcast voices recently.
Yeah, well, part of the reason we didn't have an edition last week as well. So, maybe a bit of motivated reasoning discussing that this week. But yeah, as discussed, I mean, there is an investment point here insofar as the obvious read across for companies such as, you know, Haleon, I suppose, Reckitt, you know, the companies making the kind of things that people will buy when they've got when they feel a bit under the weather, in short.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're kind of dealing at the moment with what's being called a triple-demic. So you've got COVID, you've also got RSV, very common respiratory virus that, you know, it's sort of affects healthy adults like a cold would, but children and the elderly are particularly hit hard. You also have strep A going around, not just in the UK. I think there's some evidence in the US that it's particularly virulent this year. So as you kind of mentioned, on an economic level, this is going to cumulatively add up to a lot of missed work days in the coming months. So there's a potential kind of macro impact there. But more kind of directly, demand for over-the-counter medicines, so your Strepsils, your Lemsips, is kind of through the roof at the moment. US pharmacy chains are reporting shortages of children's cold medicines in particular, which is, you know, if you're looking at it fairly cynically, this is quite good news for the makers of those medicines. And I think they'd already been anticipating kind of a bumper year in these sales. Back in the summer, Reckitt Benckiser sort of projected a long-term increase in the sales of their cold and flu products. And in the first half of the year, its health portfolio has sort of surged, I think, close to a quarter. So there's all the kind of evidence in the world that this cold, flu, RSV, triple-demic season is worse than last year when a lot of places still had mask mandates in place and those kind of things. So it's definitely look out for Haleon and Johnson & Johnson and Reckitt Benckiser and kind of keep an eye on their next quarterly results, because, it's all evidence suggests it's going to be a big season for them. But on kind of a longer term level, you've got to think about vaccine impacts as well. So Pfizer and GSK are both working on RSV vaccines. We don't currently have a vaccine for RSV. It's a very, very common virus. It can be very dangerous in certain populations. So I think those are both sort of scheduled to launch next year. And consumer awareness of vaccinations is going to be really high because of COVID. So, yeah, there's every chance that those are kind of blockbuster potential vaccines as well. So you've got this shorter term, people need cold medicine, and we're, there's, you know, it's flying off the shelves. You've got future vaccine demand. And then you've also got a kind of macro impact. Keep an eye on all those sick days and see what that potentially does to the economy.
I suppose there's one, the counter argument, maybe a positive in terms of general health, is that all this stuff could just effectively burn through quite quickly. So you're just bringing forward the peak. So that doesn't necessarily mean that sales are going to be strong for these companies over the, you know, months ahead. Maybe their, you know, January, March quarter will be lower. Who knows? But it's, when you mention the vaccines, it's interesting as well, because perhaps part of the reason we have this situation right now, speaking in my entirely unqualified medical opinion, is that there is that kind of immunity deficit from the past few years when, you know, no one's been outside, no one's been mixing to the same extent they would do at this time of year. And now that is kind of coming back in, you know, with a bang.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also there's not like a scientific consensus around how this is going to go. As you said, it could burn out relatively quickly, or we could see kind of new strains circulating through populations, people getting infected with things multiple times. It's we're sort of a human petri dish at the moment to see how this is all going to work. Normally, I think these viruses, they tend to come in waves. So you might have a wave of RSV and things quiet down, then you get a wave of flu, but they all appear to be hitting at once, whether they kind of burn out and things go back to normal, or whether they sort of stick around and you're seeing lots of reinfections, remains to be seen. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Well, as we said, it has been going around, it seems, anecdotally, certainly for at least a couple of weeks. So let's hope everyone's built up a decent amount of immunity before the Christmas time, and everyone gets to enjoy a nice Christmas time recovering with their families. That does bring us to the end of the show and the end of the podcast for the year. So thank you to everyone for listening. We hope you have a good break and a restful time, and we will see you next year on another Companies and Markets show.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.